Welcome, I'm Ethan Elkind, and this is Your Calls One Planet series. On March 12th of this month, EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin announced plans to dismantle all of the agency's climate policies and reverse the agency's core legislated mission of protecting human health and the environment, safeguarding our clean air, water, and land, and developing and enforcing environmental regulations. Beyond that, according to E&E News, EPA is also planning to roll back key scientific findings, terminate existing grants, fire scientists, and overall how the agency collects and uses greenhouse gas data. Fossil fuel interests and their supporters are celebrating these announcements, with Myron Ebel, who led Donald Trump's 2017 EPA transition team, calling the announcement, quote, Christmas in March. So can the administration implement these anti-environmental policies, or will legal obstacles block them? To discuss what the future may hold for environmental protection in the U.S., we are pleased to be joined by two guests. First, I want to welcome Ken Alex, Director of Project Climate at UC Berkeley Law's Center for Law, Energy, and the Environment. He spent 8 years as a senior policy advisor to California Governor Jerry Brown, the director of the Governor's Office of Planning and Research, and chair of the Strategic Growth Council, focusing on climate, environment, and land use issues. And Ken is also my colleague at UC Berkeley Law. Ken, good to have you with us on the show.
Thanks, Ethan. Nice to talk to you.
And we're also pleased to be joined today by Marianne Lavelle, an award-winning reporter for an independent investigative Pulitzer Prize-winning nonprofit news organization, Inside Climate News. Marianne has covered environment, science, law, and business in Washington, D.C. for more than two decades. Good to have you back on the show, Marianne.
Glad to be here.
So, Marianne, let me start with you. Can you give us an overview of Lee Zeldin's March 12th announcement about EPA's plans to dismantle all of these environmental regulations? There were 31 separate actions that were discussed. It's a lot to unpack. Can you just maybe describe at a broad level what was announced?
Right. When we first saw these press releases coming across the deck, almost any one of them, we could have written a long story about how important it was, but there were 31 of them by the end of the day. And it's every aspect of clean water, clean air regulation, and even the measuring of things like greenhouse gas and where we are on our progress to addressing climate. All of these regulations Lee Zeldin has proposed to roll back. In some ways, it's not a surprise, but the way the announcement came across is clearly there is this message that this is a major change for the EPA, and the EPA's mission is the view is that the EPA's mission will change, and it will no longer be protection of environment as its primary mission, but assisting in the administration's policy on energy, especially on really opening the doors to every type of fossil fuel sort of energy without restriction.
Yeah. Well, Ken, Alex, let me turn to you. What stood out for you in looking at these orders? As Marianne said, there's 31 different actions at issue here. Anything jump out at you in particular?
Yeah, I think the overriding concept here that, in fact, Zeldin's quote says that the idea that the agency's mission is to, quote, lower the cost of buying a car, heating a home, and running a business, and that this is the largest deregulatory announcement in U.S. history. I think the administrator, Mr. Zeldin, has forgotten the purpose of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, which has protection in has protection in its name. They're not the Department of Commerce. They're supposed to actually enforce environmental laws. And I think that the overriding idea here is that enforcement is going to take a back seat, which is a pretty serious concern for overall environmental protection that the agency seems to be walking away from.
Well, and on the subject of environmental protection, I mean, really, ultimately, what we're talking about, in addition to just broadly the air and water of the United States, is for some communities specifically that are really overly impacted by pollution or perhaps other extreme weather events, sea level rise and climate-induced calamities. What is this going to mean for them? And Marianne, let me field that question to you, or direct that question to you first. What does this mean on the ground for those communities that are affected?
Yes, I mean, there's good evidence that there are communities that are affected more than others, that are there are communities bearing the brunt of environmental assaults. And during the Biden administration, for really the first time in a really concerted way, the government, the U.S. government's enforcement actions, the way it was giving support to communities took into account the environmental injustice legacy. What this administration is doing is kind of erasing that reality, I would say. No longer is there going to be any consideration of environmental justice factors in any aspect of what EPA does. And the administrator, Lee Zeldin, he characterizes this as a way of being fair to everyone, but we know that we're living in a situation where the environmental assaults are not fair. They're not meted out equally among communities, and there is kind of this idea that there's some sort of that the whole idea of environmental justice in the view of the Trump administration, that's over with DEI as something, as an illegitimate sort of affirmative action or something, where, as we know, it has been meant to address what many of these communities mm-hmm. have been suffering for too long as having their health really harmed by multiple pollution sources.
Yeah, definitely kind of multiple layers of impacts to some of these communities. And I also want to let listeners know that we're going to have a representative from one of those communities on later in the show, Robert Taylor, Executive Director of Concerned Citizens, a nonprofit that's based in the St. John the Baptist Parish in Louisiana that's been affected by environmental injustice. And we'll talk more about what's happening in that community later. Ken, just thinking about some of the communities in California, when you were in state government, I know you were working with places around the state that were very impacted and needed partnerships with EPA. Can you talk about what this would mean for some of those communities in California?
Well, we have to step back a minute, Ethan. I think it's not so easy to change regulations. So I'm actually less concerned in the short term about changes to the regulations, including in California, because first of all, California has its own program and does 90% of its own enforcement. Actually, US EPA, because California has its own very sophisticated set of programs, US EPA enforcement in California is a fair amount less, and some of the most impactful proposed changes here are around coal-fired power plants, which California has none. So some of this is less impactful for California, not to understate it, not to downplay it too far, because these are serious changes and impacts. But California is probably less impacted overall by these regulations and the changes proposed. But I think where the impact will really be felt is around the slashing of the staff and the slashing of the budget. Those are people don't really understand fully what regulatory agencies do and how important it is to have inspections and to ensure that industrial processes are operating in the way that they should. The areas that we see that the most are places like oil refineries, of which there are quite a few in the Bay Area. Again, I should point out that California has its own very sophisticated set of state regulatory agencies. Those departments are not impacted by these changes and proposed rules. So I think it's actually the impacts will be felt more in other states.
And can you mention just the gutting of the workforce? So EPA had a total workforce of 18,448 employees in 2023, including over 17,000 permanent employees and 1,400 temporary employees. There are a lot of people who work there. And Marianne, I know you've spoken to some of these folks who have talked about just how haphazard the firing process has been, laying off a lot of these workers who are going to be needed to do this dismantling of these regulations. Marianne, what is your reporting telling you about what's going on just within the staffing at EPA right now?
Yes, Ken is right. Even though Lee Zeldin announced these all in one day, by no means can that announcement take away the regulations. There are rules that have been in place like since the 1940s on how you change regulations. And it has to be transparent. There has to be public notice and comment. There has to be a response to what the public comments are on these. It's a very involved process. And meanwhile, the administration's plan is to cut either 65% of the personnel, or maybe it's 65% of the budget. Either way, it would bring EPA back to the lowest level of funding or personnel in its history, and in an inflation-adjusted terms. And the idea that this diminished staff is going to be able to do the work involved to undo all of these regulations, it's just not going to happen very quickly. One thing I wonder if Ken might talk about, I know one of the things that the administration wants to do is take away California's ability to set air regulations as it has done since the very beginnings of the Clean Air Act. And I wonder what your thoughts are on that, because yes, states should kind of stand in for the EPA during this time of retreat, but what if the administration works to take away the state's rights, the state's authorities?
Yeah, Ken, do you want to talk about that? Because EPA or the Clean Air Act does have a special carve out for California to exceed national standards. You want to talk about what's at stake for California, what the legal process might be?
Sure. So there, a quick history here. The U.S. Clean Air Act was passed in 1967. It's been amended since then, but the original Clean Air Act goes back to 1967. It was based in large part on the California Clean Air Act, which was passed in 1963. And in recognition, and because that grew out of the smog issues in Los Angeles to a large extent, but in recognition of the fact that California had a unique role, the U.S. Clean Air Act gives California the authority to create its own emission standards for emissions from vehicles. And California's used that authority for decades. But there's a catch, which is that every time California has its own standard, which other states can adopt if they wish, California has to get a waiver from US EPA. US EPA has denied California's waivers on two occasions, once under the Bush administration and once under the first Trump administration. In both of those instances, those administrations ended, and then the next administration, first Obama and then the second time Biden, reversed the waiver denials and gave California the authority. So I'm fully expecting that we'll see some California waiver denials from the Trump administration, and those will go to court. There is a very clear set of legal standards for granting or denial of waiver, and California undoubtedly will litigate that authority quite extensively. And we'll see where that goes. Most in environmental rules allow states, federal laws allow states to set their own standards. The Clean Air Act is one place where it's very limited, at least in terms of auto emissions. So California needs that waiver, and it's a big deal because, as I say, other states can adopt California's rules, and about 24 states have done so in the past. So California's impact on air emissions is outsized to the rest of the country.
Yeah, such a hugely consequential set of litigation likely coming up here. I want to let listeners know that this is Your Call's One Planet series. I'm Ethan Elkind. We're talking about the EPA's announced decision to roll back a whole series of climate regulations, environmental protections. We're joined by Ken Alex, Director of Project Climate at UC Berkeley Center for Law, Energy, and the Environment. Formerly spent 8 years as Senior Policy Advisor to former California Governor Jerry Brown. We're also joined by Marianne Lavelle, an award-winning reporter for the independent, investigative, Pulitzer Prize-winning nonprofit news organization Inside Climate News. And I also want to hear from you, our listeners. Do you have thoughts about what these EPA announcements might mean for the country, for your community? Are you concerned about it? Is there something you'd like to see the opposition to these moves do to try to fight back against what EPA has announced? If you want to email us with any questions or comments, that email address is yourcall@kalw.org. Or you can also call us at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. We would love to hear from you if you want to join the conversation. And Ken, just to go back to you on the litigation process here, last Trump term, the opponents to these types of actions were very successful at halting in court all these regulatory rollbacks. What do you think is likely to happen this time? What's the potential timeline, and how successful do you think that litigants might be? Or do you think the Trump administration is perhaps a bit more savvy now this term than they were their first term?
Well, I think it's a mixed answer, if you will. So on the regulations, as was pointed out, it's a very complex process. You have to go through a whole set of series of fact-finding and challenges, administrative challenges, and public disclosures and legal process. That can take years. So the 31 regulatory changes that Zeldin announced, I think their ability to undo those regulations is somewhat limited. Doesn't mean that they won't create a lot of havoc. It also sends a pretty significant signal that there's not going to be a huge amount of enforcement of those rules. So I would expect that that there will be violations of the rules and environmental harm as a result. But we won't see a lot of enforcement. Having said that, as I noted, I think the biggest place where we're going to see impact is the cut to the budget and the cut to the staff, an absence of environmental enforcement. And we know historically when enforcement falls off, that there are environmental consequences. We have environmental rules because of the pollution in places like Love Canal, New York, from many decades ago that sickened hundreds and even thousands of people, and it actually continues with some environmental harm to this day. There were actually for the younger people in the audience, there was a river in Ohio that actually caught on fire as a result of pollution. I would not be shocked to see pretty serious environmental consequences from the gutting of US EPA, less so because of the attack on these regulations, at least initially.
And Marianne, the administration is also targeting a program called the Greenhouse Gas Reporting Program that's meant to find out where greenhouse gas emissions are coming from and how they could be reduced. Can you talk more about this program and what the significance could be if they are not monitoring and keeping track of these polluting industries? I mean, you really need the data to be able to enforce, as Ken was describing, but also regulate these industries.
Right. This program has been around for a long time, and there's been enough studies that show that the industries that do have to report their greenhouse gases are much more successful than other industries in reducing their greenhouse gases. If you can't measure it, you can't address it, and that is it's one of these things that in our day-to-day lives we might not experience it like we would experience pollution, like a river going on fire or anything like that. But it's really important to know where we are on greenhouse gas pollution, especially because, as you know, its impacts are profound, even though you can't smell the carbon or see the carbon that's building up in the atmosphere. Another thing about climate in general, the one thing that I think was very foundational that Administrator Zeldin said they want to do is to reevaluate the endangerment finding on greenhouse gas emissions. That is the finding that is 16 years old now, that greenhouse gases are a danger to human health and welfare. And it is based on that finding that the EPA has put into place all of these regulations on power plants and on motor vehicles. And I agree with Ken that it's going to be a long time before they're able to really undo those regulations, but they have now sent a signal to the power industry and to the auto industry that we're really not going to be enforcing these standards. We're going to be trying to get rid of them. So you're not going to see the one thing we saw when the Obama administration really didn't get a chance to put its power plant regulations into effect. The industry really invested in a lot of improvements anyway, and power plant emissions did go down between the end of the Obama administration and even the beginning of the Trump administration before really plummeting during the COVID epidemic. I don't think we're going to see that same sort of pressure now, because from the very beginning, they've sent out a signal, we're not going to measure this. We don't even think that greenhouse gases are a danger to health and the environment. And that is very troubling. The impact that it could have on industry just by sending that signal.
So consequential. Want to let listeners know this is Your Calls One Planet series. I'm Ethan Elkind. We're talking about EPA rollbacks of various climate and environmental protection measures. We're joined by Ken Alex, Director of Project Climate at UC Berkeley's Center for Law, Energy, and the Environment, and Marianne Lavelle from Inside Climate News. We also want to hear from you if you have thoughts about what should be done to try to oppose EPA's moves. If you have questions about what EPA is proposing, the number to call to join us is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. You can also email us at yourcall@kalw.org. We have an email in from James in Oakland who writes, should we be happy they're laying off EPA staff if that means they don't have the capacity anymore to deregulate environmental policies? Marianne, your thoughts and response. Is this ironic to some extent that these budget cutting moves, the layoffs, might actually prevent them from implementing their agenda?
Well, they may be shooting themselves in the foot, but there's going to be a lot of collateral damage as they do that. We're going to have a situation where people who have urgent environmental problems in their backyards are not going to be able to pick up the phone and call the regional office and of EPA and really get attention to things that have happened. Again, the EPA is an agency that's so important in times of crisis and that sometimes we take for granted when we're not in a crisis. But my colleagues at Inside Climate have written about how in Kalamazoo, Michigan, when there was a terrible pipeline breach that polluted the river, that EPA was the agency that had to come to the scene. This is, there's example after example of how we really even the fires in LA, the EPA had to be on the scene to address kind of the hazardous waste issues from what was left over after the fire. What they may have less personnel to deregulate, but they have less personnel to do everything else as well.
And Ken, I know you studied Project 2025 before the election. You came out with a document running through some of the basics of Project 2025. Of course, a lot of political media were saying that sort of believed Trump from saying he was distancing himself from it. But I'm curious now, how much of what we're seeing happening at the EPA matches what Project 2025 had planned and directed?
Yeah, this is right out of the Project 2025 playbook to go after anything having to do with climate change, to kill off science. We haven't talked about that much at all, but there are science advisory groups that work for EPA. Those are being killed off. It's basically an oil, gas, and coal agenda. It's getting rid of the social cost of carbon. It's gutting the agency, undermining government function. Yes, it's a dream scheme right out of Project 2025. And so the the architects of Project 2025 must be living a dream here. And it's very concerning.
Yeah, the Christmas and March comment from Myron Ebell might summarize that to some extent. Well, we're almost out of time for this segment. We're going to be joined in after the break by Robert Taylor from Louisiana to talk in more depth. But Marianne, just wanted a final question for you. Ken's going to stay with us, but we're going to let you go in a second. But I just wanted to ask about what are the next steps here? What are you seeing in terms of opponents mobilizing, and when can we expect, you know, these proposed deregulation actions coming out?
Well, we're already seeing the next steps, which is that the administration is in court and in some cases getting its wrists slapped and held back from doing some of the things it's doing. For instance, these grants that that were contracts signed, that the Zeldin has backed off of. The courts have ordered him to stop, and that litigation is going forward. They are going to have to be justifying in court every one of these actions, and the problem is, as we've been saying, you know, people can battle back in the courts, and these groups are succeeding, but in the meantime, who is really being proactive about the environment, and especially about the climate crisis that mm-hmm. we are in, and the crisis for so many of these communities that are at the front lines of the pollution that is created by the oil, gas, and coal industries.
Well, Marianne Lavelle, award-winning reporter for the Pulitzer Prize-winning nonprofit news organization Inside Climate News, where I know you've covered environment, science, law, and business in Washington, D.C. for more than two decades. I just want to thank you for coming on Your Calls One Planet series and giving us the latest about what's happening with EPA.
Oh, we're glad to be here. Thanks so much.
All right. And Ken Alex from Project Climate at UC Berkeley Center for Law, Energy, and the Environment is going to be staying with us. We're also going to be hearing from Robert Taylor, Executive Director of Concerned Citizens of St. John Parish in Louisiana, about what the administration's moves to dismiss certain environmental justice lawsuits will mean for communities like Robert's in Louisiana. So stay with us here on Your Calls One Planet series. We'll be back just after this short break. Welcome back. For those of you joining us just now, I'm Ethan Elkind, and this is Your Calls One Planet series. We are podcasting the show, and you can find out more information at yourcallradio.org. You can also listen to our past shows there. And if you have a show idea for us, we would love to hear from you. You can drop us a line at yourcall@kalw.org or give us a call anytime at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. And we also want to hear from you. We're talking about EPA rollbacks, announced rollbacks of various climate and environmental protections, gutting of EPA staff, and dropping EPA enforcement actions. We want to hear from you. Are you concerned about these moves by the EPA? Is there something you would like to see opponents to these moves do to mobilize and try to fight back? The number to call to join this conversation is 866-798-TALK. 866-798-8255. You can also email any questions to yourcall@kalw.org. Well, now I want to welcome Robert Taylor to the show. Robert is the Executive Director of Concerned Citizens of St. John Parish, a nonprofit organization based in St. John the Baptist Parish, Louisiana. His primary mission is to advocate for the health and safety of all citizens by working to hold government officials and industry accountable for the quality of our air, water, and soil. So, Robert, welcome to Your Call.
Thank you very much.
So, Robert, we were just talking about how quickly the Trump administration has been moving to make these announcements, reversing environmental protections, dismantling the EPA's Office of Environmental Justice and External Civil Rights, including the termination of its staff and the elimination of all related grant funding. Can you talk about what these changes mean on the ground for your community?
It is so devastating to our efforts, but it also means that we really now have to really bolster up and double or triple our efforts to protect ourselves from these chemical plants.
And Robert, can you talk, for those who aren't familiar with St. John Parish and your area in Louisiana, can you just talk about what the community is like and what kinds of environmental challenges you've been facing there?
The community, it has over the years since the coming of DuPont Denka turned into a majority Black community of working class peoples. But most of the people in this community, really, about 90% are homeowners. If a little close-knit community of working class people here, and we built our own Catholic church here. We had our own Black public high school, which is now Fifth Ward Elementary School. It was originally Fifth Ward High School. And it was the center of the Black community here in Reserve, which geographically sits in the center of St. John the Baptist Parish.
When you mentioned Denka, can you talk about Denka? This is the company that has a plant in Reserve, Louisiana, in the so-called Cancer Alley. Can you describe what the plant does and where it's situated in relation to the residents you just talked about?
Yeah, the plant, what they did, they purchased a former plantation in Reserve called Bell Point Plantation, and it's situated right in the heart of Reserve. And
Please continue.
Yeah, they went into operation back in 1968, late 1968. And the people here were not aware of it. We didn't have any input into whether they would be allowed to operate here. We didn't get a chance to make any decisions on that. And so we never even knew what the effects of their presence here was going to be, except we were told that it was going to provide jobs. And later on, they talked to us about some economic advantages that it brought to our community, which we saw none of this. We've had an experience. I think the plant has 230 employees. This is what they told us when we first started this struggle with them back in 2016. They told us that they had 230 employees. Well, Reserve itself got all 9,000 people. There are 40,000 people in St. John the Baptist Parish. So the effect that this plant had on this whole parish, let alone those people who they were sitting directly on top of, I mean, it was silly for them to even mention 230 jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we're speaking with Robert Taylor, Executive Director of Concerned Citizens of St. John Parish, a nonprofit based in St. John the Baptist Parish, Louisiana. We're talking about the Denka plant and the town of Reserve. And I would just note Reserve is one of several towns on an 85-mile stretch that's come to be known as Cancer Alley. There's some 200 fossil fuel and petrochemical facilities operating there. According to a study from Human Rights Watch, this is the largest concentration of plants of that nature in the Western Hemisphere. And given the elevated rates of cancer in that area, that's where this unfortunate situation, this unfortunate nickname of Cancer Alley, has come about. And Robert, I know that the Biden administration, when they were controlling EPA, sued Denka in early 2023, alleging that this facility posed an unacceptable cancer risk and demanded cuts in toxic emissions of cancer-causing chemicals. Can you talk more about the lawsuit? Because now we have the Trump administration announcing that they have essentially dismissed the lawsuit. They've dropped the lawsuit. So what is the latest status there?
Yeah, the lawsuit has been dropped. We struggled here since when EPA first came to our community back in 2016 to warn us, to make us aware of the danger and to give us some ways that we could protect ourselves from it. And we fought fruitlessly up until that Biden administration, like you just mentioned. And when Mr. Regan, who was the then head of the new EPA, he actually came to Reserve. He went to Fifth Ward. He mingled with the people. And out of that meeting, we came up with some of the solutions. The problems that we discussed, that he witnessed, And they took positive action. They took positive steps to try to ameliorate this situation here that was so desperate and so toxic on our community.
And can I, please continue, Robert.
No, yeah, don't let me just ramble. But, I get so emotional about this. I try not to because it's so devastating to our community, yet it's being treated so nonchalantly. Well, actually, that's not the word for what the attitude of the new administration is, because they have just completely, totally disregarded the people here.
Yeah,
administration, the position that they are taking.
When these decisions are made in Washington, D.C., and then have such terrible consequences for communities like the one that you're representing and living in, Robert. And Ken Alex, let me turn to you on this. I know you're maybe not familiar with the intricacies of this specific case, but you've done a lot of litigation before. You work for now former Governor Jerry Brown. You were the supervisor for the environmental section of the California Attorney General's office. When you hear a story like Robert's and read about a case like what we're seeing in Louisiana being dropped, what are some of the ramifications, but also what are some of the options that a community might have when the government decides to simply drop a case that was otherwise trying to hold a polluter accountable?
Well, first of all, just as a human reaction, I hear what Robert has to say, and it's devastating. And my sympathy to Robert and his community. It just underscores that what's happening is, after really 70 years of not perfect progress, but progress, American progress on environmental protection, we're seeing it dismantled in a matter of months, and it's very depressing. But directly to your point, what has to happen now is that states and local communities are going to have to step in as best they can. It's a big challenge for a community like Roberts to it's not easy to file a large scale lawsuit against major companies that have endless resources to defend themselves and then attack anybody who attacks them. But there are legal mechanisms. There's doctrines like public nuisance that communities have used. There are state laws, and there are places where people can use citizen suit provisions under federal law and under state laws. So there are some legal remedies, but in no sense is it an easy path to follow, and the absence of the federal government is quite substantial. My hope is, and of course the Trump administration, we're seeing attacks on law firms that the Trump administration doesn't like, because they've pursued cases on a pro bono basis to help communities like Roberts. So that's gonna be harder to find as well. But I think it's essential now that communities step up, and that law firms step up, and that we have a concerted and collaborative response wherever possible.
Let's go to the phone lines. We have Bill in San Francisco calling in. Bill, welcome to Your Calls One Planet series.
Thank you. I think as one of your guests said about Robert's area in Louisiana, you know, this is the federal government saying, yeah, just die. Not just allowing the polluters to pollute at will, but cutting health care, whether it's Medicare, whether it's Medicaid, whether it's the VA. And they're also trying to cut the data collection that is essential for proving the damage that's done. you know, I've lived in New York City and I've lived in San Francisco the vast majority of my life. And these are places that have the capacity to have that data collection, whether it's economic, whether it's pollution. And there are lots of areas that are worse hit that don't have that because they're smaller areas. Or their politics in the state or the region are with the polluters.
Yeah. No, Bill, I appreciate you calling in to describe that dynamic. And I think, Robert, I really want to hear your reaction to that. Is that an apt description of what's happening right now in your community? How is your community reacting to these changes now that we're seeing? I mean, they really are cumulative, as Bill pointed out. It's not just the environmental policies, but the healthcare that is downstream from a lot of this pollution. So can you just talk about your reaction to Bill's description here of the dynamic?
Bill, he was right on. That's the basic reaction that we get from everybody we talk to here. So they decided to just let us die. Well, I think really what it comes down to, not just let us die, because this means the actions that these people are taking, it's murderous. You know, when they are allowed to, if this, with all of the scientific evidence we have about the impact that this plant is having on our people, all of the people who died, all of those who are suffering now, and these poor children who are being exposed at such tender ages, and they want to, this government now has made sure that we're not able to even protect ourselves. That to me is what their intent is. It fits together with something, a title that I was made aware of a few years ago, a definition of our description of our community as a sacrifice zone.
Mm-hmm. It's so painful to hear that expression in this context, but Robert, it does feel very apt, you know, so unfortunately. And Robert, what are the next steps now for your organization, Concerned Citizens of St. John Parish? What are the legal recourses? What are the actions that the community might be considering taking now that the Trump administration has dropped this enforcement case against this this plant?
Yeah, well, we're fighting right now for that. We're struggling now. We're reaching out, and there are people who are responding. There are avenues that we're going to take. There's actions that we are going to take. There are some avenues still. We've talked to some lawyers who there is hope, and they are going to get with us and help us, because we're not going to lay down for this. We're going to have to determine and develop some sort of means of protecting ourselves. This is terrible for this. We're under attack from our government. It's terrible, and we're not going to lay down for it.
Robert, for people who are listening who want to be able to support the work that you're doing, what do you recommend? Where can they get more information? How can they get involved to help?
COSJ.com.
Our website, COSJ.com. And we welcome any support that we can get.
We'll definitely put a link to that on our website as well. Ken Alex, Director of Project Climate at UC Berkeley's Center for Law, Energy, and the Environment. It's been great to have you on this whole show here. I just want to, as we only have a few minutes left here, ask you about what can people in blue states, people listening in places like California, what do you recommend that they do to try to oppose what the Trump administration is doing? For those who are really outraged by what we're seeing, what do you recommend? What is the next step that has to be taken here?
Well, the very most important step is to think about 2026. That's the next federal election, and the need to ensure that the House in particular is flipped. The most important thing is to make sure that people vote, that they recognize that there's a way to change things, that if there's a Democratic majority in the House, that it changes the relationship of the Congress to the presidency. That's the most immediate and important thing that people can do. Please continue to talk about climate change, to talk about impacts of climate, recognizing the impacts in communities, and shine a light and work in any place that you can, work collaboratively. If we do things alone, if St. John's Parish has to do this alone, they're not going to make it on their own. So we have to work together, communities across country and people working in unison can make a difference here in a big way.
Well, I think it's a wonderful note to end on. I just want to thank you both for coming on to the show. Ken Alex, Director of Project Climate at UC Berkeley's Center for Law, Energy, and the Environment, and former Senior Policy Advisor to California Governor Jerry Brown. Thanks so much for joining us on Your Calls One Planet series.
Thanks very much for having me.
And Robert Taylor. Robert Taylor, I want to thank you as well, Executive Director of Concerned Citizens of St. John Parish, a nonprofit organization based in Louisiana. Thank you so much for joining and talking about what's happening in your community right now.
Thank you very much, Alex.
All right. And that is Your Call. It is produced at KALW in San Francisco. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, you can visit our webpage at yourcallradio.org. You can also find us on iTunes, or you can give us a review, and you can follow us on social media as well. And if you do have any show ideas for us or feedback, please do email us at yourcall@kalw.org. We'd love to hear from listeners and love to get your ideas for future shows. Malihei Razazan produced today's show. Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Ethan Elkind, and it's Your Call.